The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize our
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it. Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Thursday, January 16th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for being here at the Voice of the Marijuana Nation, where we're bringing you the latest up-to-date information on the news, culture, science, history, and health of marijuana, cannabis, ganja, hemp, whatever you want to call it. We're here to support it. Thanks for being here, and make sure you visit our website at 420radio.org. If you can help support our operations, click on the donate button, give us a one-time donation, or become a monthly VIP supporter. It really go a long way toward helping us bring this message all across the country and around the world. Thank you so much for supporting us. On today's show, we are getting ready for tomorrow. We are going to have a live coverage from the State House in Salem, Oregon, where Kevin Sabet will be testifying before the House Committee. I'm not sure which committee, but the House legislature there on our plans to legalize marijuana in the state of Oregon. He's, of course, going to say that's a bad idea. The hearing begins at 2 p.m. Pacific time. So we're going to start the show an hour early with cut-ins. We'll talk to some of the activists there. We'll bring you as much of the coverage as we can. I also believe the coverage is covered live on the Oregon State Broadcasting, so we might just take that video window and bring that in for you as well, so you can watch the testimony live. I have got my testimony prepared here, the testimony to the Oregon Legislature, rebuttal to the testimony of Kevin Sabet. We're going to bring that to you in our Radical Rant segment at the end of the show. I'll give you a preview of what I have to say to the Oregon State Legislature. Also on today's show, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at the recent trend now in four states where legislators who had previously introduced medical marijuana bills are giving up on them in exchange for the CBD-only Alepsia bills. We'll tell you why that's a terrible idea if you're a person who's in support of marijuana legalization. We've also got our 420 radio news coming up right after the first break, so we'll bring you all the latest news headlines from around the country, including New York State, where the proposed medical marijuana bill there is getting a lot of criticism. We've also got a Ninth Circuit Court decision in California that affects medical marijuana dispensaries. We've got a legalization bill in Maryland. We've got the Denver Broncos Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl, and a decision from the Attorney General of Washington State on the bans on legal marijuana sales there. Also, Daily Toker Tunes with a new tune from the Dirtball right out of Bend, Oregon. It's all today on The Russ Belville Show.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to The Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the best way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. 420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green. Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis, fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today. This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 16th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson has decided that Initiative 502 that legalized recreational marijuana does not prevent cities and localities from banning marijuana sales. Quote, "Although the law establishes a licensing and regulatory system for marijuana producers, processors, and retailers in Washington state, it includes no clear indication that it was intended to preempt local authority to regulate such businesses," end quote, Ferguson stated. Initiative author Allison Holcomb responded, quote, "The initiative explicitly and specifically gives the Liquor Control Board the task of providing adequate access to licensed sources to discourage purchases from the illegal market. It is hard to see how allowing cities and counties to ban stores does not directly conflict with this provision of the state law," end quote. The opinion is not binding, but some advocates fear taking the issue to court may invite the possibility the whole commercial marijuana system is invalidated due to conflict with federal law. Colorado, unlike Washington, explicitly allows localities to opt out of marijuana sales, and many have, including the state's second largest city, Colorado Springs. The mainstream media is beginning to pick up on the marijuana theme of a Denver Broncos Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl. In his monologue Tuesday, late night talk show host Jay Leno joked about, quote, "a whole new meaning to the term Super Bowl," end quote. And the Sacramento Bee interviewed officials from Normal and Marijuana Policy Project about the possible matchup of the two teams from America's two largest legal marijuana cities battling it out for the NFL championship. And in Colorado, the Boston Herald is reporting on New England Patriots fans in Denver already stocking up at the city's legal pot shops. Quote, "We had 45 people from Massachusetts today. I'd say at least 80% of them are here for the game," end quote, said the owner of Mile High Cannabis, just across the street from the formerly named Mile High Stadium, home of the Broncos. He also said, quote, "We saw 250 to 300 San Diego Chargers fans last weekend. I know for a fact we're going to see well over 300 Boston fans," end quote. A review panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals let stand today three previous rulings by lower courts that rejected appeals by medical marijuana dispensaries. At issue is the pressure used by the federal government against landlords of marijuana dispensaries and the dispensaries themselves
for violations of the Controlled Substances Act and other federal laws. Dispensary attorneys had argued for an injunction from the court against the federal government, citing constitutional issues that they believed should have allowed California's Compassionate Use Act to protect the dispensaries. The judges ruled yesterday that no new arguments had been raised, the constitutional issues raised were moot to this application of the law, and federal law still trumps state law on this issue. State Senator Dianne Savino of New York has said that the recent plan by Governor Cuomo to use the so-called Olivieri Law to provide access to medical marijuana at select New York hospitals is, quote, unworkable. She also said, quote, if I thought we could do it through the Olivieri Law, it would be great. But we've looked at this, consulted a few attorneys. It's not possible, end quote, said Senator Savino, who is sponsoring a medical marijuana measure again in Albany. She also continued, quote, hospitals can't distribute medical marijuana, period. They are federally licensed facilities. The federal government will happily come in and shut them down, take their licenses away, and take away their license to distribute other scheduled drugs, which they can't afford to do, end quote. Senator Savino also doubts the hospitals would have any marijuana to distribute anyway, saying, quote, you can't transfer marijuana across state lines. Again, it's federal law. The idea that we would allow a hospital to distribute marijuana that's been seized in a drug raid and give it to patients is absolutely absurd. Nobody knows what's in that stuff. End quote. Baltimore City Delegate Kurt Anderson has proposed a bill in Maryland to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. Quote, we say let's have the government regulate it and tax it. We can raise more than $100 million a year. We'll stop wasting law enforcement resources, end quote, said Senator Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Montgomery County. Baltimore's own Neil Franklin, head of law enforcement against prohibition, explains, quote, 60% of the profits made by drug dealers out there today come from marijuana sales, end quote. Sarah Love, head of the Maryland ACLU, added, quote, in Baltimore City, African Americans are 68% of the city. They are 92% of all marijuana arrests, end quote. Despite growing support for legalization nationwide, the bill still faces stiff hurdles in the form of opposition from the Speaker of the House and the Governor. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 16th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. You can read all of our news headlines in their entirety at National Cannabis Coalition. Visit ncc420.com to read up the 420 Radio News every day. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at the recent trend in abandoning medical marijuana bills for CBD-only bills. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today. Let him bring in the beat. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Let them bring in the beat. Stony Sundays, starring Coral Reefer from San Francisco, California, Mondays at 5 p.m. Pacific on 420radio.org.
Welcome back, everyone. 15 after the hour, time for us to go behind the headlines where lawmakers are abandoning medical marijuana bills for CBD-only bills. The August 11th, 2013 premiere of Dr. Sanjay Gupta's documentary Weed prominently featured elderly people in Israel and a young man in Denver experiencing remarkable medical recovery thanks to medical marijuana. However, the one patient who captured the nation's imagination was little Charlotte Feige, the girl with the intractable epilepsy called Dravet syndrome that seems to be nearly cured by the high cannabidiol or CBD extract from the Charlotte's Web variety of cannabis. While nobody with a heart and a brain would deny Charlotte her medicine or deny that CBD is profoundly medical, what has happened since the public has grown aware of this treatment is a bifurcation of medical marijuana as a political issue. We now have Alepsia, the name lawmakers in Utah have coined for the high CBD extract Charlotte uses, versus medical marijuana, that sticky, crude, raw plant that still contains the nasty Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, in it that gets you high. You can hear it in the defense of providing this Alepsia in states where medical marijuana is forbidden. It has less THC in it than hemp milk in a grocery store, goes the common refrain, so it can't possibly get the patient high. While this is something parents of epileptic kids are happy to hear, the AIDS, cancer, Crohn's, cachexia, PTSD, and other patients who require the medicinal value of THC are probably cringing at the re-demonization of the other half of medical marijuana. When medical marijuana began, proponents of legalization accepted that as a baby step necessary to open the public's mind to the acceptance of marijuana. Once folks saw it helped patients with little impact to society, the strategy went, they'd open up to legalizing recreational use. And that seems to have been the case, as the first states to legalize and the next ones expected to legalize all have medical marijuana laws. But as time marches on, medical marijuana's baby steps keep getting smaller. California's wide open any condition medical marijuana became qualifying condition lists and patient registries in the next 10 medical marijuana states through 2010. And then became strict condition lists and no home grow in the 9 medical marijuana states since 2010. Baby steps are supposed to eventually evolve to walking and running. They're not supposed to devolve back to crawling. Now, medical marijuana is threatening to become CBD only. Lawmakers in Florida, Pennsylvania, Alabama, and Kentucky, who had introduced medical marijuana bills in the past, are now abandoning those plans and introducing bills that only legalize Alepsia-style medical marijuana. Oddly, medical marijuana advocates who are quick to accuse legalizers of throwing patients under the bus with legalization bills are silent on the THC-needing patients thrown under the bus in these 4 states. Apparently, a legalization bill has to be perfect to get some medical marijuana advocates' support, but there's no limit to how compromised a medical marijuana bill can be and earn their support. In a sense, the strategy of leveraging compassion for the sick is backfiring against us. In the beginning, we would put the cancer patient front and center and ask, how could you not support medical marijuana to alleviate this person's suffering? People who might have hated pot were forced to hate cancer more and support medical marijuana. Now, the epileptic child is front and center, and medical marijuana supporters are asked, how could you not support a CBD-only medical marijuana law to alleviate this child's suffering? We're forced to support medical marijuana that won't benefit most of the patients that need it, and support for THC is now being equated with support for getting high. Meanwhile, GW Pharmaceuticals, the drug maker behind the whole plant extract Sativex spray, that's intended to be a replacement for medical marijuana, is busy preparing to introduce Epidiolex, a CBD extract to mimic Alepsia, for testing and trials. Sativex is in its phase 3 clinical trials already and may be ready for U.S. distribution before the 2016 election. Epidiolex is sure to be fast-tracked for approval by the FDA in response to the overwhelming reaction to Charlotte Feige and the migration of hundreds of sick kids' families to Colorado. How will the dispensary-only medical marijuana systems defend stocking cannabis plant products when there are legit pharmaceuticals of reliable dose and equal or better efficacy, approved by the federal government, prescribed by physicians? Thought I killed that. Sorry. Libramator. Let me try that again. How will the dispensary-only medical marijuana systems defend stocking cannabis plant products when there are legit pharmaceuticals of reliable dose and equal or better efficacy, approved by the federal government, prescribed by physicians, and paid for by insurance? How will home grow states defend allowing patients to harvest a plant that can get non-patients high and is a black market commodity, especially in Washington, where that would be competition for the legal market? In the next 10 years, the path of medical marijuana leads to pharmaceuticals. Those who wish to defend medical use of the whole plant, THC and all, need to recognize that legalization is now the only path that gets you there. Without legalization, medical marijuana must become more restrictive and eventually pharmaceuticalized to filter out the stoners looking to get high. If you want your THC for medicine, you're going to have to join those of us who are fighting for THC to get high. There, Libramator. I just needed another minute. Jeez, you'd think she was a stoner or something.
No, she's always on time.
I guess so. Well, it's 20 after. Time for us. 21 after now. Time for our break. Let's get to it.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm a reefer smoking man.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 420 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
Smoke, smoke, smoke.
All right, everyone, welcome back. It's about 25 after the hour, and Bago Schrago is not joining us today. He's got family stuff going on there in Arizona, so I'm going to take care of the Groovin' Thursday today and bring you a track from the new EP from one of my... In fact, I'm going to say it right now, and you know, all apologies to... and all mad respect to Chuck D and to Eminem and a bunch of other cats out there that I like, but... The Dirtball is my favorite rapper. In fact, I went back and I got all of his albums, loaded them up onto my my Galaxy, and I put on the shuffle play. I have yet to hear a song I don't like. I love everything this guy does, and it's even better that he's a good old boy from Burns, Oregon. He's right here from Central Oregon. I call him the Ted Nugent of rap because he likes to go hunting. He's into hunting and fishing and stuff like that. So I can really identify with this guy. Of course, he's now a member of the Cottonmouth Kings, so you can catch him on tour with the Kings, but he's still doing a lot of solo stuff. And this latest EP is called Desert Eagle. You can find out more about the Dirtball. Just go to thedirtball.com. He's also out there on Facebook. You can visit Suburban Noise Records for more of his tracks and so forth. And the other thing I appreciate about the Dirtball is he's not just a rapper, he's also a musician. He was a drummer, he's still a drummer, and so I think he takes a lot of his very percussive and syncopated rap style from the techniques and rudiments that you use in drumming. It's very, very compelling to me as a musician and a bass player to be able to hear that, and I hope you appreciate that rap style like I do. So here we're going to give you the title track from the new EP from the Dirtball. This is called Desert Eagle.
Wasn't gonna make it. Cops fucking around, think I'm gonna take it. Fuck no, I got a sick knife and I'm swinging further than ever. Get ready for the real riding. Dead or no longer, my papa, mama, on a survival mission. Capital DB division. Flying out of my nest, your best run for cover. You little motherfucker, give me your life. This time, think I'm gonna meet ya. Make a move and then fight away to eat ya. This game ain't bigger, not for the both of us. You will never get away from my rhythm. This time, think I'm gonna meet ya. Make a move and then fight away to eat ya. This game ain't bigger, not for the both of us. You will never free from my kiss. Desert Eagle flies through the night. Praying on weakness, run for your life. This Desert Eagle won't compromise. Unleash the demons. Study every single thing about them. Smooth back from your late attack. Nobody gonna get the way. Time for the dive. Smash on them with incredible power. Devour all the backwater. Sucker feeders and need a song to never bond. But you gone. I'm already flying above. Stuck in your blind bank. Crap on critter. Should've never come out of the cave. Knowing that I'm ready to kill anything moving. Knowing it'll be my fleeting time. Walk up on my warpath. Knock up on your door, man. You don't really want that. I'm a crush bullshitters. Smash all critters. Feed them to the fan. Or run up for nom dinners. All American competitor. Leave me the fuck alone. Or you will find my claws in your dome. This time, think I'm gonna meet ya. Make a move and then find a way to eat ya. This game ain't big enough for the both of us. You will never get away from my rhythm. This time, think I'm gonna meet ya. Make a move and then find a way to eat ya. This game ain't big enough for the both of us. You will never free from my claws. Desert Eagle flies through the night. Praying on weakness, run for your life. This Desert Eagle won't compromise. Unleash the demons. This game ain't big enough for the both of us. You will never get away from my rhythm. This time, think I'm gonna meet ya. Make a move and then find a way to eat ya. This game ain't big enough for the both of us. You will never free from my claw.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUST to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belleville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUST to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belleville Show.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Radio 420 is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Check out our midday lineup every weekday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern. On Mondays, it's Hour 2 of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour with Herb Thrasher and Radical Russ from Portland, Oregon. On Tuesdays, Weed Porn Daily with Oscar Diaz from Florida. On Wednesdays, Gordon Green's Music Planet with Gordon Green from Spain. On Thursdays, the Activism Hour with videos from High Times, Leap, NORML, SSDP, MPP, and more from the United States of America. And on Fridays, Cannabis Cure TV with Greg DeHote from Sussex, England. That's 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and 7 p.m. GMT right here on 420radio.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belleville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Well, today we're not going to have a speaker on the phone per se. We've got some new videos from our friends at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, some of their media appearances out in the mainstream showing how cops say legalize drugs. We'll switch to the video here for you from Leap.
I'm one of the co-founders of Leap, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And why we came together as an organization in 2002 is because we see the failure of the policy of prohibition in our society. I was talking to somebody earlier today and they said, well, you think these gangsters will just become honest people if we legalize drugs? And my answer to them was no, the gangsters will stay gangsters, but most of the people that are involved in this illegal trade, you really wouldn't classify as gangsters. They're more like opportunists. To give you a quick example, in 1919, there was a homicide rate in this country. We instituted alcohol prohibition in 1920. The homicide rate in this country climbed every year until it peaked in 1933 when we legalized alcohol. And by 1937, the homicide rate in America was back down to the level it was at before alcohol prohibition started. And I want to point out one other thing about 1937. That was the deepest, darkest period of the Depression in this country. So there was a lot of angry people, but they weren't killing themselves anymore because we took the product away that they were killing themselves over. Legalization of drugs is not about the drugs. It is about the gangsterism and terrorism that is supported by the illegal marketplace in this country. Law enforcement was designed by a guy by the name of Robert Peel. over in London, England, in the early 1800s. And he designed an organization of law enforcement that would protect people from other people doing them harm. When you institute a prohibition like we have with drugs in this country, what you are doing is not protecting people from other people. You are attempting to use law enforcement to protect people from themselves. Protecting you from yourself is a function of family, church, education, and the healthcare system. It never is and never should have been intended to be a law enforcement function. We are out there enforcing morality when we enforce drug laws, and that is not our job. We were not trained to do it. We are not capable of doing it. And if anything else, you see the failure of it. We've been doing this for over 40 years since Nixon kicked it off, and the drugs are more available, pure quality, and cheaper than they've ever been before on the streets of America. And we've had 40,000 deaths in Mexico in the last 5 years fighting over this drug trade. Plus, we've destroyed more lives than the drugs have by incarcerating people and hanging felony convictions on them, and denying them college educations, denying them jobs for no good reason. And one other thing I want to point out, just in case people think that if we do it hard enough, this is actually going to be doable to make drugs go away. We have the largest prison system on the planet. And I would like to point out one of the most efficient prison systems on the planet. And in that huge, efficient prison system, we do not have one drug-free prison in America. And if you cannot keep drugs out of prison, who is going to be delusional enough to think you can keep them out of a free society? We are spending $70 billion a year in this country trying to win this drug war. We could revert that to using that in our prison systems, in the treatment community. We can spend that money other ways. Plus, if we legalize it, I'm sure we're going to tax it. Of course we're going to tax it. We're going to generate income from it. Plus, we'll create jobs. Plus, we'll bring the hemp industry back, which was also outlawed in the 1930s when they outlawed marijuana. And the hemp industry is a very strong industry. I speak to a lot of Rotary Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, Lions Clubs, and I start out my presentation by asking them, do you think we can win the war on drugs? Now, let's define what winning war means. We won the Second World War. We don't fight the Germans and the Italians and the Japanese every once in a while. The war is over. We won it. It's done. Okay? That's what one war was. So if we win the war on drugs, that means we've taken the word marijuana and heroin out of the dictionary because we've defeated the drugs. They're gone. And I ask people to raise their hands, and nobody ever puts their hand up to think that's possible. So now let's change the discussion. If instead of talking about things like drug-free and winning the war on drugs, we start saying things like drugs are always going to be in our society, they're always going to be here, which group of people do you want to run the marketplace? Do you want it run by gangsters, thugs, and terrorists who have 13-year-old children selling drugs on street corners? Or do you think that maybe a licensed, regulated marketplace where we can set age limits and distribution points and control purity of drugs is a better system? Call me crazy, but I'm not a prohibitionist. This isn't going to solve our drug problem. We have to deal with our drug problem as an educational and a healthcare issue.
So as long
my question would be then, if you're legalizing drugs, doesn't that promote more usage?
I don't know, does it? How many people do you think in America are not using cocaine because they can't get it?
So we're saying we're going to take this down to its most minute point and say, just like a pack of cigarettes, if you choose not to smoke, you're not going to do heroin, you're not going to do cocaine.
It's interesting when you mention tobacco, because one of the comments I get from people all the time is, if we legalize drugs, what kind of a message does that send to our children? It's condoning. It's saying that drugs are really okay. If you ask any tobacco smoker who's been smoking more than 20 years, if they ever felt condoned in this society, they'll tell you, oh yeah, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I felt absolutely condoned. Every place I walked into, there was an ashtray. I could smoke on an aeroplane all the way from New York to Los Angeles. You ask cigarette smokers today if they feel condoned, and they'll tell you no. They feel barely tolerated by the rest of society. And let's also point out another victory. We have gotten 50% of the adult cigarette smokers to quit smoking in the last 10 years. Without banning one cigarette, without burning or poisoning one tobacco field, just by simply making it less easy for people to smoke, and also by talking against it and pointing out the errors of it. That's the things that work. You know, the drug czar said the other day at a press conference, this drug issue in America is fundamentally a healthcare and an educational problem. And nobody asked him, what other healthcare and educational problems do you think we should use the criminal justice system as our main approach to? Because I can't think of any.
So you say, do away with all the laws and rules and regulations. Again, you can drink alcohol out in public. I don't know if I would want to see someone shooting up, you know, some heroin next to me.
You set regulations. We are setting different regulations than we have ever had in this country for tobacco use. We are now preventing people from smoking in the park, in some places, from smoking on the street. We don't allow people to walk down Main Street unless they change the laws since I retired, but it used to be illegal to walk down drinking a can of beer. You couldn't do that. So those are things we have to do. You know, I just want to remind you, in 1933, when we legalized alcohol, the federal government didn't legalize alcohol and set up a whole regulatory system for the country for alcohol. They basically got out of the prohibition business and said to the states, regulate it any way you want to. Mississippi didn't end their alcohol prohibition until around 1970. Those are local things to do. What we're trying to do is get the federal government out of the prohibition business and let the law enforcement go back to doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that's protecting people from each other. You know, 20 years of police work, working in the town of Tonawanda, community of about 80,000 people, I remember two incidents. One was a father who found out that his son had committed a rape, and he turned his son into the police for that rape. Another one was a mother who found out that her son was committing burglaries, and she turned her son in for committing burglaries. Not once in 20 years did a parent ever turn their child in for drugs. Not once. And I can't believe that out of 80,000 people, some mother or father didn't find in the sock drawer a little baggie with something in it. But when it was their child, the last thought in the world was to turn us over to the police. They found other ways to deal with that problem. And we as a society should find other ways. We have 450,000 deaths a year. It used to be, it's probably down a little bit due to tobacco. 150,000 deaths a year due to alcohol. Now, my question is, when you look at all the illegal drugs and you only have 30,000 deaths a year from all illegal drugs combined, the question is, if prohibition is such a good idea, why don't we bring back alcohol prohibition and prohibit tobacco? If it's a good idea, let's do it with all the things we don't like. And the reality is, when I say that to people, they look at me and say, well, that doesn't work. And that's absolutely right. Prohibition doesn't work.
That's Peter Crist from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I would say one of the best speakers Law Enforcement Against Prohibition has. If you get a chance to book or see Peter Crist in your town, you definitely need to do it. You can contact leap.cc for more information on booking.
In the best of the rest of the news, residents of Colorado will go green this New Year's, but not because they drink too much alcohol on New Year's Eve. It's because on Wednesday, the first day of 2014, recreational marijuana shops will officially become legal in that state. Personal use was already allowed in Colorado following the 2012 elections, but the start of totally legal marijuana shops is something new and different and totally exciting. For the first time ever, Americans will get the chance to purchase marijuana just like they do alcohol. And what's more, Colorado officials believe the allure of legal marijuana shops will lead to a big tourism boom, helping bring in much-needed jobs and revenue to their state. Joining me now for more on this story is Major Neil Franklin, Executive Director of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a retired state police major in the Maryland State Police Department and the Baltimore Police Department. Major, welcome back to the program. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. First, the basics. Legalized pot shops. What's this going to mean for people in Colorado?
It's going to mean many things for the people in Colorado. Number one, I think it was in 2010, they spent about $37 million on arresting people, processing people for possession of marijuana.
In that state?
In that state. So that's a savings, the direct savings right there. Wow. From the taxpayers. But more importantly, it's the being free from that. I don't know if you've ever been arrested before.
I have, actually, but it was for protesting against the war and stuff like that.
But it's not a pleasant experience.
No, it's not at all.
Okay, not just the act of being arrested, but the fallout from that. You know, many people have lost their jobs, you know. you spend a night or two in a detention center and that process and being fingerprinted and the money that it costs, you know, to hire an attorney and everything that comes after that, they will be free of that.
Yeah.
But more importantly, at least from my perspective, from one of law enforcement, number one, the police are going to be able to pay attention to crimes of violence more now.
Real criminals,
you know, the rapes, the robberies, domestic violence, crimes against our children, which have been neglected, you know, for so long now. In addition to that, I think that the citizens of Colorado are going to see jobs coming. They're going to be one of the very few states that, to economically pull themselves, you know, up out of this downward spiral that many states and cities are in today.
Yeah.
What we've been hearing about are the direct cost savings, the direct money that will be coming from taxes, but no one's talking about the indirect savings and the indirect money that's going to be coming into the economy in Colorado from those thousands of people who will be put to work.
Right.
You know, they'll be paying taxes.
You mean
they'll
like after Prohibition ended, the restaurant business boomed
in
the country's cities
because
you could have a glass of wine with dinner. So
all these new employees are not just paying taxes, yeah. They're spending money in the local stores and buying cars and buying homes and paying their bills on time.
We have just a minute left, but I'm curious your take from a law, you're a police officer,
well,
from a law enforcement point.
I think this is a bad day. January 1st is going to be a bad day for criminals. It's going to be a bad day for the cartel, at least those who are operating in Colorado,
yeah.
And soon to be Washington State.
Yeah.
And outside of the country, Uruguay, it's a bad day for them and for our local gangs, you know, because they're no longer will they be able to make money selling marijuana on the street corners and the violence that they cause from that. At least 60% of their proceeds from selling drugs is gone in Colorado.
Wow. So it's a good day for police.
It's a good day for police. It's a good day for our kids who are no longer going to be recruited into the illegal marijuana selling business, selling marijuana in our schools. I mean, how can anyone, other than criminals, be right. Against this new policy in Colorado?
Yeah, yeah. That's a brilliant analysis.
Yeah.
Major Franklin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Pleasure and honor to meet you.
That's Tom Hartman on the RT channel, Russia Today. Tom Hartman, by the way, happened to be my mentor in talk radio back in 2006 when I first started down this path. So nice to see Tom Hartman on the airwaves. A very, very good man and one of the smartest human beings I've ever met. You want to talk about the founding fathers? This guy can tell you about the founding fathers. When we come back, we'll have time for a rant on more Kevin Sabet.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business, you know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
Hey, Ellen, want a hit? Want to smoke a joint before trying this on?
Here you go, Ellen. You want to get high? We got some great high stick in the back.
Smoke. Kind buds. Sexy.
You're going to love this stuff. It'll get you really high.
The Russ Belville Show.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
According to lifelong pot smoker and rocket scientist Carl Sagan, making apple pies from scratch is extremely difficult.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages.
A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the horizon of the Milky Way.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks. Well, you know, the other day I did the full-fledged one-hour Tuesday presentation on Kevin Sabet. Of course, I won't have an hour to speak when I'm down in Salem tomorrow doing live testimony in front of the Oregon legislature. So I have printed up just 12 slides, 6 pages of my testimony to the Oregon legislature. Copies now available for all of the legislators. I'll also post it online at radicalrust.com once I'm ready for it. But for my own purposes, to help practice, and maybe for your own educational sake, I'll give you a look at what I will be showing to the legislature tomorrow in my testimony to the Oregon legislature, rebutting the testimony of Kevin Sabet. So let's get to it. I just want to show the legislators that Kevin Sabet's job is to convince legislators and voters to maintain the criminality of marijuana possession, cultivation, and sales. To do so, he distances himself from unpopular drug war tactics by proposing a system of evaluation and rehab for marijuana users arrested by police. He proposes the status quo of arrest and incarceration for marijuana cultivators and sellers. While he says that the administration is dedicated to a strategy of treatment prevention for drug abuse, a look at the drug control budgets from the Bush and Obama administrations show the same 60-40 split in favor of law enforcement, interdiction, and eradication over treatment and prevention. Sabet's proposals merely divert adult marijuana consumers to unnecessary drug courts and rehab. It's quite easy to see what Kevin Sabet is trying to do. Rhetorically speaking, he knows that the drug war is incredibly unpopular, so he is trying to distinguish the drug war as being something he is not for as well, so that he is not cast with that unpopularity of arrest, incarceration, racial disproportionality. But he also wants to portray marijuana legalization as an equally a fringe topic so that he can paint himself in the middle as the kinder, gentler solution. But a simple logic chart of what he proposes shows he's not that different from the drug warriors. In marijuana, there is a marijuana market of growers and sellers, and then there is a market of marijuana users. Drug warriors prefer that the market and the users get arrested, as does Kevin Sabet. Only marijuana legalizers propose that the market and drug users get to the tax base, that they pay taxes and contribute to society. The only difference between Kevin Sabet and the drug warriors is while the drug warriors want all people in the market and all users to go from arrest to incarceration, Sabet prefers that the market goes to arrest and incarceration, and that the users go to an evaluation and rehabilitation that either leads to incarceration, probation, or fines against marijuana users. And these fines we find are completely unnecessary because not all marijuana users have a problem. In fact, most marijuana users do not. When we look at the characteristics of clients that are admitted to rehabilitation, if we look at the primary or secondary drug that they are using, we find that 21% of those that are in rehab right now are there for marijuana. 1 out of 5 rehab people are there for marijuana. Now, when we look at the amount of marijuana that the marijuana users had used the month before going to rehab, 37% of them used no marijuana whatsoever, and another 17% only used marijuana once, twice, or 3 times a month. That is to say, more than half of the people in rehab for marijuana didn't even use marijuana on a weekly basis. And most of those people that are in rehab for marijuana are referred there by the criminal justice system. People who have only used cannabis, 60% of them almost, 59.04, are referred by the criminal justice system, and only 13% refer themselves. Compare that to alcohol, where 29% refer themselves, and other drugs, where 47% refer themselves. Another tactic of Kevin Sabet is to bring up the specter of big tobacco, that somehow we'll have a Joe Camel that's preying on our children. Well, folks, Joe Camel has been missing since 1998. No kid under the age of 16 has even seen Joe Camel on a TV or magazine ad. And there's a number of federal regulations that have been passed since the 1960s that control the First Amendment rights of the tobacco companies. How is it that we got fewer kids to smoke tobacco, even though there's a industry that promotes it and kids can get it when they're 18 years old? Another thing Kevin likes to do is to confuse legislators by proposing that since alcohol and tobacco only bring in $40 billion in taxes, yet cause $400 billion in social harm, legalizing marijuana would not reap any tax benefits. Well, this is like saying football and boxing cause head trauma, so we must ban golfing. Alcohol and tobacco cause so much social harm because they're toxic and addictive, and in the case of alcohol, leads to violence and crime. A 2002 Canadian study showed marijuana users to cost 1/8 a drinker and 1/40 a smoker, costing just $20 per year per user in healthcare costs versus $328 per year per user to maintain cannabis prohibition. Besides, whatever costs exist from marijuana use exist now. Legalization doesn't invent marijuana, and we're taking in $0 in taxes to offset that and spending millions of tax dollars in vain to try to stop it. There is a big marijuana to fear, and that big marijuana is the Mexican cartels and underground growers who pay no taxes, foment violence and corruption, and ravage our public lands. The RAND Corporation estimates 15 to 26% of their income derives from the illicit marijuana trade. Kevin Sabet has no proposal that ends the criminal control of the marijuana market. Will legalization end the cartels? Of course not. Criminals will always commit crimes, which is why we wonder, why do we allow criminals to control and benefit from the inevitable and unstoppable trade in recreational marijuana? Now, some fear marijuana legalization means more teens will have access. But after 40 years of marijuana prohibition, high school seniors who say getting marijuana is easy or fairly easy has remained between 80 and 90%. Compare that to 10th graders and their access to tobacco, where they are also 3 years younger than what the age limit of 18 is. In 1997, 12th graders could get marijuana just as easily as 10th graders could get cigarettes. Since we've started strictly carding kids for smokes and put the cigarettes behind locked counters, we have effectively made access tougher for minors than it is for marijuana. Now, we'll have more of this to bring to you, and we take this into Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Hope you'll join us for the last couple of slides that I've got here in the Kevin Sabet presentation. And again, we'll post this up on the internet. I already posted most of the graphs and pages on my Pinterest account. If you go to Pinterest.com/RadicalRuss, you are welcome to download any of that and use it for your own letters to the editor, for your own presentations, whatever you can do to help spread the word about Kevin Sabet and his disingenuous tactics, folks. We're not going to just let him come down here to Oregon and lie to our legislature, that's for sure. That's all the time we got here for hour one. And again, stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to take a look at some of those other states that are proposing CBD-only bills for medical marijuana. We've also got a new story coming in from Missouri on legalization. You want to catch up on that. And the head of the DEA is freaked out about marijuana legalization. You got to hear this stuff. Thanks for joining us. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Stay tuned for hour two. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalrus.com. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you grow it.